You may be right, but we're on the air. This is Floyd J. Winters on The Morning Edge, and welcome to The Morning Edge, and here is Augie.
Good morning, Tampa Bay, and oh, the fox is out of the cage, only it went into a bigger cage. It's the cage with Trump alone, a debate with Trump, and the moderators on the second showing tried to take him down, and unfortunately, he's got a pretty mean bite. Mr. Trump does, and that fox got bitten last night. And Carly Fiorino, who obviously is friends with the Saudis and the Bushes, did the best job in the first debate. I watched both in full. I felt that she was the clear winner there, if there's so-called a winner in these things. You have a lot of wieners and no winners, and Fox and Trump and Carly were singly the outcome. Some people liked John Kasich, and Rubio was somewhere in the hinterland showing up some real adroitness and skills or whatever they do. And when you claim first one thing and then another, you're for immigration, then you're against it. The flip-floppers who have to flip one way for the Tea Party and flip the other for Fox and flip another way for you and me and everyone else, I tell you, it's a bit of a joke. But this morning we have Dennis Mealy and his son Sullivan here on The Morning Edge along with myself and Floyd. And Dennis, what did you think of the debate last night?
Well, you know, I thought that two things, a couple thoughts, and we have full coverage of it in the www.thebradentontimes.com. I thought at first that the happy hour debate at 5 o'clock was kind of a weak consolation prize. And I wasn't really, I was thinking that was kind of the death knell for the candidates that were on it. But afterward, I'll tell you what, I agree with you with Carly. She did excellent. And she would not have gotten anywhere near that much attention on the main stage.
Exactly.
Neither would have Rick Perry. And certainly, you know who actually moved the ball the most with me? I still don't find him to be an attractive candidate by any way. But I really liked the way that Lindsey Graham performed. You know, he was very honest, very forthright. He answered questions directly. He did not get emotional or get bogged down in rhetoric. He stuck to his message, which is one that I think a lot of Americans aren't going to agree with. He does, but I have to give him credit for carrying an honest message to his audience. And I think that he moved the ball. I don't think he made himself a contender by any means, but I think he moved the ball on at least being taken serious as someone who is sincere about what he wants to do should he ever get to the White House. But I think you're right. I think Carly Fiorina did excellent. I think she probably saved her campaign right there. I think anyone who dropped off last night, you have to have a culling here because it's such a huge field, and I think we saw that in the primetime debate. So I think in the primetime debate, you saw how hard it was to stand out, especially if your name was not Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah. What did you think, Floyd, last night, or did you watch it?
Oh, I absolutely watched. It was entertaining. Donald Trump was interesting. He wanted to insult as many people as possible, went right into women to insult as many of them as possible as a whole group. Megan was a good moderator last night. He wanted to go out of his way to insult her for no reason at all, it seemed. And it was quite entertaining. It was amazing, though. We went over to my friend's house to watch the debate and get all set up there. And just when they asked the most important question, the second most important question, to Jeb Bush. Jeb, as a Bush, do you still think that what your brother did was right? And just when they asked the question, the power went out. It was out for 20 minutes.
Oh, that's
too bad.
And
I never quite heard the answer.
He fumbled around with that. What did you think of that answer that he gave?
Well, you know, I think he did better than he had before. Obviously, he had lots of time to prepare for it. And, you know, that's the default answer. Instead of coming back and saying, you know, listen, that's something that maybe I got caught off guard with and I'm giving more time to thought. The easy way out on that one, I think, is the sincerity to the family of the troops and never being able to say, you know, so at that point, how could you be more sincere to families? I mean, yes, there are a lot of vets. Augie, you know, I was an Army captain. I have a lot of friends who served in Iraq and Afghanistan. There is a desire to say, hey, we did something over there. And there was a lot of good done. You know, if you're over there as a soldier and you're building schools and you're helping putting water and pumps in, and that's what you're doing day to day, And you're seeing that, and you're seeing people with less maybe get a little bit more. It's easily, I think it's easy to dissect that from the big picture and tell yourself while you're in this dangerous situation where every day you have the potential of getting killed, I think there is this, you know, this desire to say, make it mean something. But I think it's our leaders, our politicians, who sometimes have to have the courage to say, listen, maybe it didn't. Maybe it was a mistake. Maybe the work you did while you were there was good, but maybe the lives that were lost, the millions of people that were either killed or displaced that weren't our soldiers, the economic toll, the debt we're going to have to carry, the future burdens, maybe that was a colossal mistake. Not only maybe knowing what we know now, but what everybody in this room knows, we knew then it was a mistake. We knew then that the reasons that we were giving weren't real.
Real numbers. With 3,000 at 9/11, but we lost 4,000 troops afterwards.
At least.
Over $1 trillion, yeah. $1 trillion in national debt.
Right.
Many, many thousands of wounded. There was no ISIS or ISIL or Daesh in Iraq at the time. Now there is. Mm-hmm. There were Christians in Iraq beforehand. Now there virtually are not Christians in Iraq. It's a whole different world. We unleashed a holy, unholy terror as a consequence of what we did, and what did we accomplish? What was the final accomplishment? $1 trillion in debt, 4,000 Americans dead, and what have we accomplished? We've got an unstable Middle East like never before.
And only because, if you listen to the message last night, we didn't follow through further. There was always just a little bit more to go, and it would all be fine over there.
Lose more
it
American
would all be perfectly stable and fine if we just would have killed some more people, if we just would have sent some more money, if we just would have sent some more troops. Somebody got...
Which they said about the Vietnam War over and over again.
Absolutely.
Just more people should die, and that way we'll win.
And probably most frightening on that vein, Floyd, was last night, how many times did you hear that reiteration of, we got to fight him there so we don't have to fight him here? I heard that several times, that if we don't, they will
exactly
be here.
What Osama bin Laden wanted. Take the troops, move them halfway across the world at their expense, fight them on our ground, on our territory, which they're not familiar with, they're not equipped for, and fight a guerrilla war against them, and a guerrilla war over halfway around the world will almost always be successful. It was during the American Revolution, it was during Vietnam, it was during the French War in Vietnam before 1956 and in Bien Dien Phu. It's happened over and over again. History has proved the Russians, even close by, couldn't beat the Afghanis, and what helped to lead to the downfall of the Soviet Union.
The business of spending us into debt and through war is an old way to bring down empire, and that's exactly what you guys are pointing to. And was it worth it all? Solomon, do you have any thoughts on all of this? You've heard all this for quite a while.
And he watched the debate last night.
And you watched it. What did you think of the debate last night, Solomon?
I thought that a lot of the possible presidents, a lot of the candidates, they just use their time not to answer the actual question the moderator asked them, but just to speak their opinions.
Anything stands out in your mind, Sullivan, in that regard? Any particular candidate didn't answer the question or should have?
Donald Trump did not answer many of the actual questions asked.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
That's the one that really stood out to me.
Sticks in your mind, huh?
Yeah. Well,
he's known for dodging that. Yeah, most of them talked about something else as a way to talk. The thing that bothers me a little bit is this has exposed what really, and ISIS actually has been going on in with different names and different titles and different purposes. ISIS is an all-out, gained the caliphate locally in this region and compete with Iran for the caliphate, so that the Shia don't take over southern Iraq out of Tehran. And the real enemy over there, of course, I've said so many times on this show, is Saudi Arabia. Every radical Muslim comes out of Saudi Arabia through Wahhabism and the madrasas in Saudi Arabia. It is Saudi Arabia who does the terrorism. And we hear the actual reverse of that in terms of the Iranian deal. You hear all the politicians who are conservatives saying, no, it's the Iranians that have been doing it. The Iranians have started no wars whatsoever, and everything they've been involved in has been an attack upon themselves, to the extent, reminding people, that in 1953 we tore down their government, duly elected Mossadegh, and as their prime minister, jailed him, imposed the Shah, disbanded their parliament, and 3 years ago now, our CIA formally wrote and apologized to Iran for having done
that. But it's still not part of the national debate. You know, it's interesting. That came up the other day. Sullivan and I are on our last book of our summer reading list, which is 1984. Okay. So we've had a dystopian summer. We started with Fahrenheit 451. We did also Of Mice and Men. What was the one we did in between, Sullivan?
Animal Farm.
Oh, and then we also did
To
Kill a Mockingbird. Now we're finishing with 1984. And we were going over the part where Winston is chucking the old history into the hole, so to speak, and it gets incinerated and recreated with new history. And Sullivan's asking me why it's so important to do that. Why are they taking all the effort to erase stuff that already happened? And the point is that if you can get rid of history,
yep,
you can tell people that anything is possible. And you can help them forget.
You can rewrite history to make things look possible that really aren't.
And on this point, you're making...
And actually, so we spoke about the 1953 incidents in Iran, and I used that as a perfect example. And I said, sometimes you don't actually have to literally do it. You just have to not teach it in a textbook, not talk about it on the news, not bring it up in the societal debates about today's issue and say, well, it's really about nuclear weapons. Really about...
On this point, 1979 is always talked about. Those crazies over there, look what they did. The reason why they did it was in retaliation for 1953 and what we had done to them, the national taking over the oil from their own people through the Shah, and all the terrorism the Savak under the Shah did to them from 53 to 79. So our penalty was to have hostage taking those terrible Iranians for doing that.
Right, and we talked about that as well. But so, you know, important part is you didn't see much disparity at all with foreign policy. Everybody was pretty much on the same page. You did hear a little bit of an honest debate in the second, in the primetime debate about Social Security. Chris Christie. I thought Chris Christie did the best job in terms of coming across as a polished candidate who answered the question asked in a way that directed towards his policy ideas. Again, you can agree or disagree with him, but that's what I ask for in a debate. So I thought Chris Christie was probably the best candidate in that sense. I thought, surprisingly, Marco Rubio was probably second.
Okay.
Both of them stayed away from the rhetorical talking points that bogged down candidates like Rand Paul. They just couldn't get away from that. They had to chuck back in the red meat and say the four or five things that are always... And it was a pretty vocal crowd. So it was obviously a very red meat crowd. You know, you can hit the high notes on Obamacare or repealing it or tearing up the agreement with Iran, whatever the case was. And too many people took a chance to take every question into a red meat area. But Christie did well, and he opened it up. It was him and Mike Huckabee.
Huckabee did something interesting.
He did, yeah. Huckabee stood up for the idea of Social Security and not rolling back the benefits ever.
His idea, which I thought was an interesting idea, basically a use tax, is what he's proposing.
He is, and that goes to the flat tax, and we can talk about that separately. But then Christie came back and at least started to talk about it. Now, I'm not in favor at all. There's no reason whatsoever to advance the age of Social Security, especially saying due to 25 years. I hate when they say that we've made a promise to these other people they plan their life by. Look, I'm 40 years old.
It's a promise to everyone.
I'm 40. I've been paying into it since I was 14.
Right, exactly.
Okay? I still have a quarter century before I can claim it. Better than that, right? But I plan my retirement accounts for the idea that I'm going to get this at that age, and I think I paid into it. You know, we're talking the point. I'm paid into it for 20-some years. I think the promise is, but it's not really a promise. It's an agreement I made. Wasn't a choice on.
Here's a possible compromise. What if the Republicans said, "Okay, we'll raise the Social Security cap for payments from $108,000." to a quarter million or to a half a million if you will raise the age limit just a year. Those two things would fund Social Security for your child's lifetime if you made a compromise. And unfortunately, our Congress doesn't do stuff like that. Both parts have to give.
If you did what you said, Floyd, take the cap off, why should the dollars from $100,000 be exempt?
Well, okay,
let's put it this way. Tax.
Let's
put it
this way.
More money, pay less.
I hear what you're saying, but and that sounds reasonable. It sounds like it's a compromise, but it's really not, because all you have to do is scrap the cap completely. Yep. Don't take it at 250. If you take it all income pays, it's just like they pay the income tax. The income tax doesn't stop at a certain amount.
Right.
Okay. All income pays it. Right, and your income tax goes into social programs, right? So all income pays it, and then that would shore it up for a century. That's literally what we're talking about with this cap, just scrapping the cap. Now, I did like that Christie talked about means testing, and he said, you know, you got to make in retirement over $250,000 a year in earnings in retirement off of your interest and stuff, and have $4 or $5 million liquid assets. That's not much of a means test, if you ask me. That's a very, you know, small percentage of Americans that would count that and say, well, you guys don't need it. It should be means tested on the way out, and it should be, we should scrap the cap. If we did both of those things, Social Security, and if we stopped stealing from the trust every year.
Absolutely.
In the budget, we put it back on the books, right? So this is a solvable problem.
The three things we steal from our Social Security: the post office is constantly deprived of gained monies they've created themselves through hard work of working people, a lot of union people, and Medicare. Actually, there's savings to everyone. No control of medical care costs by the providers, that is, particularly the hospitals, and the insurance companies in between that.
But let's look at it from the debate perspective.
Those are the three biggies.
Let's look at the debate perspective. So we've got Christie. And I think for a large part, Jeb Bush, even though I felt like they were trying to play the biggest game of gotcha with Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush's questions were very much in, you said this back then, what do you think then? You gave money to Michael Bloomberg's foundation and he supports pro-life. I mean, that was, I think, unfair to Bush as a candidate compared to the questions of everywhere else. So what we've got right now, I think, is you've got Bush, Rubio, and Christie as the serious candidates, and maybe Fiorina. I think Carly did herself a big favor last night, and I think she's put herself in that field of saying, I'll talk sincerely and honestly with you guys about debating policy, all right? I think that's your field of serious candidates. I think what you saw last night was Donald Trump as your entertainment, all right? But here's what he did. Here's what I thank Donald Trump for. Have you ever saw Ted Cruz look so small on a stage?
Oh, he looked pathetic.
Because why? Because that whole audience that he would typically tap into, you can't out Donald Trump, Donald Trump. And I think the Mike Huckabees, the Ted Cruz's.
I thought the guy you're kind of overlooking is Kasich from Ohio, I thought did a humane job of appealing to that more liberal side of things, mm-hmm. If there is one in
yes,
the Republican Party.
Yes, he came across as a moderate,
right,
which is electable.
Right, but then you get the sense that of all the people on the stage, he had the least chance whatsoever of winning the primary?
Well, that's exactly what happens when you have these close primaries.
He's John Huntsman from last cycle.
Right, Huntsman was a wonderful
great candidate. Imagine the intellectual debate. Imagine the level of real, sincere debate we would have had in 2012 in an Obama-Huntsman race. Could you imagine the difference?
He would have been problematic for Obama.
He would have been good enough to make me vote for the opposite party.
Exactly, but we would have had an actual honest debate on issues. So the good news was we've seen which candidates, I think, are interested in doing that. And I think that's important. I think those were the winners last night. I think the challenge in a primary with this many people on the stage, 16 people running for it, is that throw the red meat, too many people are doing it to make a difference. To really stand out in this crowd, to really go put yourself out there above the fray, I think you have to show you're serious about talking about the issues, and I think the field is limited to Christie, Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, am I even saying it right? Fiorino?
Yeah,
is that
Fiorino, that's right.
Trump is your wild card. I think that's your five competitive people. I think last night, everybody, unfortunately, Kasich included, I think everybody else, and I have to say, how woefully unprepared is Dr. Ben Carson to be a presidential candidate?
But he came across very likable, very well spoken, and that does speak to something.
It does for that guy that says, "Hey, I want to have my." I guess the vote of our WASU girl, Sarah Palin, that crowd. I want somebody like me. I want somebody who's a regular. You know, the idea that you can govern a country with such an inept understanding of governance, of foreign policy, of the machinery of the actual government that you want to oversee is laughable to somebody that pays attention, but you're right, it reaches somebody, I guess, who doesn't.
And he had one of the two funny lines, one of the few funny lines out there, talking about he's the only person to...
Everybody here has said something they've done that no one else has.
I was the only one to ever take one half of a brain out, but if you go to Washington, you'd think somebody beat me to it.
Thank you for that, Sullivan. That's perfect.
The other funny line came from Walker, and it was kind of interesting. I kind of liked it. Russia and China probably know more about Clinton's email server than Congress does. And I like that. I enjoyed that line as well.
How about the closer with Huckabee when it looked like he was going after Trump?
I thought he was going after Trump.
Yeah,
as well.
And That was clever. That was very clever. And that's what you see, you know, when Sullivan asked me about each person, you know, when you look at Huckabee, he's an entertainer. He's a guy that has spent a long time
on Fox quite a lot.
A long time on the radio. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had to suspend his correspondency with him. He's had a talk show with him. This is a guy who knows how to work a crowd, knows how to get the zingers. But like I said, I think those moments aside, I think what we learned last night were who are the serious candidates and what do they bring to the table?
Well, I think the other thing that's somewhat overshadowed in who's who and what's what is Fox itself. And this sponsorship of this thing, it makes MSNBC was scrambling around on the commercial breaks to try to make commentaries during the Fox commercial break to coordinate with what Fox was doing with that whole debate thing and what they could do to get some media attention. So the scrambling has got...
And I have to say, Megyn Kelly went after Donald Trump last night. That provided some of the best part, the best drama.
Fat women.
You're part of the war on women, she told him. Hold on, I have it right here.
Yeah.
And she brought up some of his quotes. Now, but again, here's the part. So you have someone, Megyn Kelly...
But see, what you're saying there is that really they were trying to target and knock him down.
I believe so. It did seem like the game plan for Fox was to really disable
first
Donald
the pledge
Trump.
And then the attack on women.
Yeah, opening up with the pledge, right. You won't do that. That was clearly geared toward him. And he answered. But here's the part that really, you know, 3-on-1, Trump beat them all.
Oh, he did.
They were on his stage, so they do
and
television news.
And the thing, too. He handled that because he went right after, actually, he went after Christie because he said New Jersey, Atlanta, all that whole business failed, and he said, I got it out of there quick enough, and I didn't lose money.
Right.
Only the mean, nasty people lost money.
Yeah, and when he talked about the bankruptcies and everything like that, he handled that deftly as well. You know, they realized, look, their business might be news entertainment, but his business is entertainment, and they were on his stage last night. He was not on theirs, and he was able to definitely deflect every one of them.
It's going to be hard to beat him.
She brought up, well, and that's the question. So if it is, let's say they don't beat him and he wins the Republican nomination, I think the Republican Party knows that means they just elected Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he can't win a general election.
And either way, if he wins the nomination, Clinton wins. If he loses and runs as a third party,
Clinton wins again. Right. Donald Trump is the key to Hillary Clinton's candidacy.
And we're going to take a break right now.
We'll go to
right
break,
back
yeah.
after this commercial.
We'll
spot.
Talk about Bill Clinton's conversation.
Sarasota is home to a true gift, the Posture Clinic of Sarasota, with Dr. Mark D'Amato, 4450 South Tamiami Trail. Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor, treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet, and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients, too. This part of the Morning Edge is brought to you by Callens, Little, and Delgado, practicing personal injury, criminal defense, and family law. Call 941-749-1446. 941-749-1446.
I may be crazy, but it just may be a lunatic you're looking for. Turn out the light.
And we are back with the Morning Edge, and in the studio with us is Dennis O'Malley and his son Sullivan, and here is Augie.
Well, we do have the situation with respect to Donald Trump and the Clintons, of Bill Clinton and Donald Trump having a conversation. You're aware of that, aren't you?
Yeah, you know, and that gets into a little bit last night with the idea of, you know, who he's given money to, that he's been a Democrat at certain times. Again, I think he handled that well. Does it give a...
Well, but the advice of Bill Clinton was, get serious and run. Basically is what he said in their conversation.
Sure, because he wants him to be the candidate. He wants him to win
exactly.
outright. Sure.
Yeah, he wants.
I don't know that Trump is going to run an independent campaign if he does not. Here's the thing. Donald Trump is a megalomaniac. Everybody knows that. So you have to get inside that kind of thinking. He's going to know that as an independent, he's not going to win, and he's probably not going to even show very well. It's very difficult. If you go back, to Ross Perot in, what was that, 92, when he got, I think, 19% of the popular vote. But remember, he didn't win a single electoral vote, okay? So when people say, oh, he got close, no, he didn't, all right? He didn't even come within, you know, measurement because he didn't get a single electoral vote. Since 1992, the parties have worked, both of them, Democrats and Republicans, very, very hard to make a Ross Perot repeat unlikely, if not impossible, by making it so difficult to get on state ballots. So we've seen that with... various candidates, Ron Paul, in the Republican Party, but then as an independent, we had Nader.
Nader cost Gore the election in Florida. They look at the...
That's not fair to say. I disagree with you 100%,
Floyd.
The
ballots disappeared. Not the ballots disappeared. They looked at the punch, the chads, the hanging chads and all that. But most of the people who voted for Nader would have voted.
That's not true, though. That's a liberal fallacy. If you look at the I'm giving the reality of it. If you look at the actual data for it, the majority of Nader voters actually said they wouldn't have voted for anyone had Ralph not run. So they said we were disenfranchised.
So
we're not voting.
Non-vote.
And he actually got about 30% of them were Republicans that voted for him. So
there's my answer right there. If 70% were Democrats,
but listen. No, because you're discounting independents, Floyd. So when you bring it down, it's a little bit further, but you're assuming, and this is what the Nader voter...
300
this is why,
votes.
Listen, this is why the Nader people would be very offended by that statement, because they say, you assume I was going to vote for Al Gore if Ralph Nader wasn't there, and I found that offensive, because most people that were voting for Nader was because they were so incredibly frustrated, most Democrats,
yes.
with the
yes.
Democratic base, with the pro-Wall Street Clinton administration,
yes.
that they had no intention of voting for Gore. They were staying at home.
That.
Now, here's the other part. You'd have to presuppose, if you had that same thing, you'd have to presuppose that Pat Buchanan didn't run either, because guess what? Pat Buchanan got almost exactly as many votes as Ralph Nader, so he really offset the difference, because then the Republicans said everybody who voted for Buchanan clearly would have voted for George Bush. But again, that's not a...
No, just the opposite happened. The people who voted for Buchanan in Miami-Dade County were voting for the second candidate on the list.
The butterfly ballot. I'm not
butterfly
talking about
ballot.
That. I'm just saying his candidacy in general, though.
Yeah.
You see how it's disingenuous
That's a fair enough thing to say Buchanan voters would have gone to the right. And the
Al Gore cost Al Gore the election. Ralph Nader did not. In a democracy, it is never a crime to offer the voters choice. And I'll tell you one other thing. When Sullivan asked me on the way here, would you vote for this guy? Do you think he has a chance to win? And I took the time to say, listen, I never use those two. I'm just in a car right over here. I never use those two things together, because here's the problem. We've done that now for 30 years straight. We have listened to the parties warn us about throwing a vote away. A vote for him is a vote for that person. No, it's not. In a democracy, a vote is for the person you cast it for.
A vote for Trump is a vote for Clinton.
You can say that, but listen, how are you ever going to move the ball? If you like Trump's policies, I don't, but if you
I'm
do,
reality.
Vote for him.
In reality, a vote for Trump will put Clinton in.
And a vote for... vote
Trump.
Clinton, because you really like Bernie Sanders' policies, but you think, oh, he doesn't really have a chance to win, that's a disingenuous vote. You'll keep getting the establishment candidates like Clinton, who are very difficult to distinguish from a Republican when it comes down to 90% of the issues that affect Americans. So when you look at it that way, you'll never move the ball, you'll never have change. The party and the powers that be that control the party will always own you and your vote, because they will manipulate you into thinking, if you're not voting for Hillary, you're voting for Jeb. You're voting for who you vote for. And unless you vote with your conscience and cast an informed vote, I respect the person who votes for Nader, the person who votes for Bernie. You know why? Because in my experience, those voters are some of the most informed, intelligent, civic participants that I have come across.
I agree with that.
And so, you know what? We need more of them, not less. Don't water them down. Don't discourage them.
This week, they had the paper that they were looking about the open primary in
Florida. This is exactly where we need to go.
And that would give you exactly what would do that you could aid
VotersVote.com.
That independents can vote in the primary elections. Right now, an independent thinker is not allowed to vote in Florida. They can't vote Republican because they're independent. They can't vote Democrat because they're independent. As a consequence, they're locked out of the primary election. If you have an open primary, so anybody votes for any candidate, you'll get the third party.
And here's the only challenge with that, is that I would rather actually the tiered voting, where you vote for your first, second, and third favorite in your own. With the open, we already had this problem in 2008 when people were, Rush Limbaugh and them were directing people to go in the open states and vote for the candidate,
vote for the Democrat.
Don't vote for Hillary, vote for, whoever, I forget what the movement was.
I'm not saying open Democratic primary, I'm saying open primary.
Where a Republican can vote for the Democrat, that's running?
Where a Democrat can vote for Republican.
And then you'll have the organized games of voting for the other person to offset it.
But you don't get it. You're going to vote for the person that you want to be elected, not trying to vote down an individual.
Well, you guys...
Why couldn't you?
Well,
I don't understand that.
The problem, you're saying that there's going to be a concentrated effort to swing the vote to an individual who has no...
In your scenario, so let me ask for you, in case I'm not understanding this. In your scenario, what would stop Democrats from saying, hey, listen, it's an open primary for... So will we go into Republican?
You have one vote. You're going to vote for your candidate.
I understand.
You want the Democrat to win the election.
There's no party primaries.
I understand.
And
I understand.
The Republican's going to either way... The independent...
So you basically mean a nonpartisan runoff.
I like that idea.
Okay, sure.
California has it. Washington has it. Louisiana has
about
it.
To have
that
it.
You vote for the person you want. You can still see an R or a D next to your name.
And then you have a runoff afterward?
Maybe you have a runoff. Nobody has 50% of the vote, you have a runoff. If you've won 50% of the vote, then you have the election done.
Yeah, well...
So basically how we do our school boards.
Well, it's not... Yeah.
But we do them nonpartisan.
Right, nonpartisan. And that way you have open primary means no party primary. Basically, how you resolve it in the end, if there's a tie or whatever.
But some states that have open primaries means that any registered voter can vote in either party. There are states that have that, and they call it an open primary.
That's when you have a party primary.
Right, so you're saying eliminate the party, their power, and their control.
Well, been done in California, it's been done in Louisiana, it's been done in Washington.
In Tallahassee, they've gone forward, and Floyd brought this forward in the show on Wednesday, that they want this on the ballot so you can vote for this amendment. The party primaries go down the toilet.
And that would be the best thing you have in politics. I agree 100%.
Yeah, that's the whole issue.
And it would allow the third party
to have a voice. Let's talk real quick, shift gears here on the...
Sure.
Since we've been talking about
the
Republicans.
Local stuff. Okay.
Well, let's talk real quick about what you guys said about Biden.
It's called allvotersvote.com.
Yeah. Allvotersvote.com.
.com.
Check it out. There's three of them like that.
There's a petition for it right now, just like we have a petition for medical marijuana, and we have a petition
to put it on the ballot as a
solar panels to be put on people's
roofs. Let's shift over to the Democratic side. What do you guys think Biden does to the race between Democrats
and Hillary? And Sanders are basically in a tie. I mean, in terms of the polling that's out there, and it's getting tighter all the time. Biden is going to watch this. Hillary's seems to have been somewhat closeted. No matter what she comes out with, it seems like she's come. A door opens and there she is. Up to that point, you hear not much about her except opinion. Biden he wins in a national election, so it's going to be an interesting problem. I mean, she lost in the caucuses in the primary with the Democrats before against Obama, when actually she had won. I watched the caucuses live on C-SPAN at the time. It was a rigged deal. They stole the primary from her to elect Obama. That is actually what happened. I voted for
her. In which caucus?
The one in Michigan.
Okay.
But at the same time, they talked about what they were going to do in Florida and the way that vote was going to be handled and what she was going to get, what Obama would get.
I got to be honest. I'd prefer Biden over Clinton.
Well, that's what's going to happen. You're going to get that kind of choice being put forward, and that's where we're headed.
Imagine Biden against Trump, the debate there. Two guys who speak the right.
Here's the shift. All of a sudden, so you remember 2008, yeah. Biden comes in, makes an early exit, you know, just couldn't get the ground going, making comments. Now, all of a sudden, John Stewart did a piece on this before he went off the air. One of his last shows, and he was like, contrasting it, where now all of a sudden every channel was talking about this lovable guffaws that Biden would make, and there was this different, you know, oh, he's that uncle you got that just says what he wants to say. And, you know, Biden has made this career, they called him Lunchbox Joe in the Senate. He's not a millionaire by any means. He's got one of the lowest net worths of anybody in Congress.
Work every day.
Yeah, and he has been known as this blue-collar guy that speaks his mind and brings pragmatic solutions to the issues. I think he would reach a lot of independents, a lot of moderates, especially if you had a very right-wing candidate on the other side. I think he would be a better general election candidate than Hillary Clinton would because she is so polarizing. I've always said she brings a vote out against her for everyone she votes for, that she brings for her. So I think that would be dangerous. But I do think she might be the most... you look at the field now. There's nobody that has any dent in her fundraising ability. It's very hard to imagine Sanders not fuming out as it went along. It's very hard to imagine him actually competing with her neck and neck now. Two things could happen. Biden can come in and actually give the worry. There's been some loud conversation among the big Democratic Party bosses that maybe Hillary isn't the best, especially with the emails, and you know they know what they're going to go after with Benghazi. The party bosses have kind of wondered aloud, maybe, you know, she shouldn't be the default nominee. Maybe we're in trouble here, especially if they don't have the Trump. Whoever gets there, and there seems to be this real concern with a Bush and a Clinton again.
Yeah.
So look at it this way. Are both parties maybe a little nervous that the one who comes up with not a Bush or a Clinton might have a huge advantage? So if it's not Jeb and Hillary, everybody will line up where they're supposed to exactly. And vote the way they're going to.
This is why Sanders is making a factor out of it.
Yes.
And that point...
So what happens, though, my question to you, Augie, mm-hmm. What happens if Biden comes in, does it maybe water down Sanders' efforts and help Hillary and make it harder with a more crowded field for somebody to stick out? Or does it chew into Hillary's support gives Bernie a chance?
I think it hands it to Bernie.
No kidding.
Yeah. I think that's
very interesting.
Because she's got a build-up campaign and money pouring in. Now everybody's going to think something else, you know.
Right.
I could see Hillary becoming the vice president out of this.
Mm.
And it's
now, I don't think she'd take it again. Because there's no path to the White House at that point. She's too old.
I know.
And, I'll tell you what. I one of the reasons I'm not a big fan of hers, and like a lot of politicians on both sides, she just seems to emit this air of entitlement to me that she's supposed to get it, and it seemed that way in 2008. It was her turn.
Bob Dole had the same problem.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And she had this kind of and they're very mean, the Clintons, in Democratic circles. It's very well known that if you get on their naughty list, you're in trouble. So the people that committed to Obama, especially before she dropped out, even when she was mathematically out, they paid a price for that. Well, they didn't get support.
All that says is Biden's going to take their heat.
Right. So when you have a candidate like that, I got to be honest, I wouldn't be, and I hate to show the side of myself, but I would find a little bit of entertainment value in watching her not get it, and watching her pout, and watching her maybe break down because, it was my turn, I deserve this.
The problem with that is the women are going to get angry and outspoken about it.
Well, they said that last time, they weren't going to vote for Obama. Who are they going to vote for, Mitt? Are they going to vote for Trump?
But
the Democratic female base is going to abandon them and vote for Donald Trump.
No, but... The problem is
Rosie O'Donnell in front of the crowd.
They're going to have to come with a woman vice president for sure.
And now, you know who that's going to be.
You think it's going to be Warren?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Elizabeth Warren would be my number one choice in the world for president right now. If I could wave a magic wand, she'd be sitting in the White House. And I'll tell you, and I've said this before, it's a shame that Hillary Clinton is only the second best female candidate in her party at best. Okay, mm-hmm. Elizabeth Warren is the real deal. And I said before, if Sanders got it, I think that that would be his bottom of the ticket. So the first woman in either one of those positions may still well not be Hillary Clinton, and the first woman president may still be Elizabeth Warren if everything shakes out a certain way and she ran on the bottom of the ticket and then ran afterwards, whatever the case was.
Especially but Bernie being as old as he is.
Yes, yes, he might not run for a second term, and then she runs.
He'll definitely choose her.
Absolutely, and I'll tell you what. Could you imagine the kind of vice president she would be? She would not be somebody sitting back in the shadows.
No, it's exactly right. I think Warren is, my wife has said, she says, if I had the choice, it's Warren over Hillary any day. In fact, I was handed two stickers saying Hillary on. She said, what are we going to do with these? She had, right. So this is the attitudes are shifting radically, and the Republicans are not going to benefit from this. But the thing with Fiorina is probably going to be the vice presidential candidate for whatever Republican it becomes.
Or Rubio. You got to remember because the Spanish vote.
Rubio has a very likable image.
Yes.
He came across probably the most polite and likable.
I think he
upbeat and positive.
Upsold himself the most last night of anybody.
He
moved the ball the most in his campaign.
The problem is who's going to get the bigger number jump this time? And that when we see what that number jump is among the Republicans, it's going to be, I think Trump's going to go higher.
I don't know. It was interesting. I watch it on Fox. I like watching Fox News.
Well, I watched it on Fox also.
And afterwards, they did a poll.
No choice.
They did a poll afterwards of the people who favored Trump beforehand. And in the audience they had, almost two-thirds put their hands up. They did a poll afterwards who favored Trump afterwards. Most of the people put their hands down. They did not like the way he came across.
Well, that's him. So that wasn't a bad night. That's what you get.
But what happened... when people saw him live and not addressing the issues, as Sullivan said,
right.
He wasn't answering the issues. He was just being the entertainer. As he said, he likes to have fun. And he was doing that, but he wasn't answering the questions. But he was ticking people off.
This morning, though, the polling is going for Trump as an increase. I mean,
I would think overall. But that's interesting you say that in a live audience. It didn't hold. I think the biggest loser, though, last night was Jeb Bush. I think Jeb Bush looked like a second-class candidate. I don't think
he looked like a car salesman.
Yeah, he didn't look like he belonged on that primetime stage. He should have been on at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, and not even there. I mean, he was really,
lost. But he has the money.
And that's interesting. And yes, he's got so much of it. Yeah,
he and Trump are the big money raisers.
And don't you think he's going to be, doesn't all of a sudden, and who would have thought Marco Rubio, and again, I got to be honest, I have underestimated him now twice. I didn't think when he came into that Senate race in the beginning with Charlie Crist, I thought he was nuts. I thought he had no chance whatsoever. He chased him out of the primary, went on to win in a landslide in the general election. And I'll tell you what, I thought there's no way he even comes close to matching Bush in this primary when it first started. And here he is. Who would have thought
he has a shine to him.
He's 100 yards ahead of Bush.
He has a shine. He has a likable image. He doesn't have the baggage
I'm not
Bush
gonna,
has.
I am reluctant to make the comparison, but unfortunately, from the Republican side, some people are going to say he's a JFK.
I knew that's where you're going when you said reluctant. Yeah. Listen, but what about, isn't Jeb Bush seeming like last cycle's Mitt Romney? Like, everybody's like, I guess we have to give him more money, do what we got to do. Like, he's looking like the pragmatic solution to heating off the people like Trump and Cruz that would kill the party in a general election. And that's really what Mitt Romney was. Mitt Romney was everybody was begging Christie to run last night. I mean, Christie helped himself last night. I think Christie is positioned very well.
He was the one person who answered the most of the questions and didn't use his time on the stage to just talk and hear his own voice.
Mm-hmm. He did. He advanced his policies. I think his late entrance, I've said this before in a column, I think it was strategically brilliant because he let people beat each other up. He's got a big enough name.
Well, he had to because of Bridgegate.
Because of Bridgegate, but he has a big enough name where he could have sat back in the wings and allowed it to happen because he's going to come in and instantly be a player. But I think he's going to displace Jeb Bush as the sane party brand, RNC brand candidate. I think you're going to see all that support move on.
Sullivan, he did this with strength and courage, if you will. The problem I have with both Fiorina and Christie, fundamentally, Fiorina was fired by Hewlett Packard for wrecking the company. And I know a person very close to me who's former CIA, FBI, who worked on Wall Street, and he affirms to that. And in the case of Trump, the Big Dig, if anybody knows what the Big Dig is, it was going to be a tunnel, a second tunnel to the Lincoln Tunnel, and it was Christie who turned down the money for it. So Christie has done a lot of bad things in the leadership leadership way. He was handed tons of money, and Sandy is slow as hell in happening. So he's going to get nailed with stuff that he's going to get angry about. He's going to show a side to him you may not like very well, I think, down the road. But so the guy that's going to come out of this, unfortunately or fortunate, depending on your
point. And I think Quincy's a bully. I think that's what it really comes down to. Yeah, when you see this, he's a bully.
In a big audience, right?
Yes.
In a big stage with 10 candidates, you're not going to
see that as much, right? There's a lot of video of people at press conferences and speeches asking questions.
Shut up and sit down.
Once you narrow it down to a few people, he's got too much
bad. The elephant in the room, no pun intended.
Yes.
Will we elect a 300-pound man for president?
He's down to about 290.
But the stress of the campaign.
Lost weight.
The stress of the campaign of bringing Krispy Kremes out, I know it will. But Mitt Romney came right out and said that. That was his big concern with him. And listen, any guy who's on that big of a stage knows how big of a problem and an issue that is with just American people and the public and everything like that, and doesn't have the self-control to say, okay, this is the most important moment of my life, I can handle this, it raises questions to me about his ability to make those kind of decisions and sacrifices in the future. I thought that was, at first I was like, is this really just a, you know, shaming type thing, this cultural thing? The way Romney put it, I thought, okay, you know, listen, if you can't get it together at your big moment and get control over this one thing in your life, that might say a lot about your ability to be a leader of the world.
You can't control your mouth as a bully, and you can't control what you put in it.
The elbows, right.
And whatever you put in it stays in it. And
right.
I mean, I think we've got a situation now. I think this is going to turn into, where is Fox and where are the other networks? And
how about the last question? God. What did God tell you about this? You knew you were on Fox.
They had to be
the
Fox.
The final question.
They did ask some good, tough questions. To their credit, I thought their questions were really
I thought Megyn Kelly was the one that gave the best performance. I'm not really much of a fan of hers in general, but I thought she gave the most honest, direct questions.
And the way she handled Trump's insults, she did a good job. She really... She didn't let it get to her.
Sullivan thought she was cute, too.
Several hotties on the Fox thing, and two of them, Kelly and McCallum, this is coming out. She was in the first debate, and I can't think of her first name, but McCallum is her last name. And both showing, I thought, a streak of intellectual independence, unlike a lot of the other people. Wallace pretends to do that. His father had a debate with him.
And is there an emptier suit than Bret Baier? I mean, just they plucked him out of some. He was in Virginia or North Carolina on a 6 o'clock news. Next thing you know, he's making $8 million
as an
anchor for Fox. And tell me you can't turn on any channel in the United States and find an equivalent to Bret Baier.
I'm talking about Wallace.
I know, right?
He's very likable. He's one of the better looking people. Fox has some of the ugliest people on the radio.
Yeah, he's got that Ken doll look down pat, doesn't he?
They would look good on the radio.
Right.
Television.
That's what I've always said. People say, why don't you do more television? I said, people always told me I have a face for radio. I don't know what they mean by that.
One you don't want to look at. But Bret Baier basically reminds me of a carnival barker.
If you
get a good looking carnival barker, you know, where's the rest of the outfit, clown?
And that's all you need to do. When people say, you know, they have talking points, they tell them what to do, they send out the RNC memos. Listen, you don't have to do that. When you pluck a guy out of the boondocks of North Carolina and you put him on Long Island and you give him $8 million a year, and now all of a sudden he's living in a place out there on in the Hamptons, he's got maybe a helicopter taking him to work, his kids are in the best private schools in the country, unless he's mentally deficient, he knows what he's supposed to say. I mean, any one of us could go up there, and we might not have the ethical lapses to be able to accomplish it, but it doesn't take a brain surgeon like Ben Carson to know what Fox wants, to know what's going to get you in trouble if you say it, and to know what's going to get you an attaboy and a, hey, why don't you come out to the country club this weekend if you don't.
But when I've listened
The only person to ever separate Siamese twins and the only person to ever take out half a brain as he bragged at the end of the
closing
statement.
Are you talking about Rush Limbaugh now? Okay. Which half a brain? Who's half a brain?
So that's what you get. You know what to do, and you're never going to see a guy like Bret Baier risk that and going back to the boondocks in order to make a point, and Fox can be comfortable with that.
It doesn't take that far-right extremist viewpoint either. I've listened to him a number of occasions. He seems to be, on Fox, a relatively moderate. And he's likable. He and Megan did a really good job on
that. I got to disagree with you on that.
I don't agree. I think the problem with
Megan did great, but
how high was her skirt?
Seriously.
I think we got Trump's image here in the studio right now, in the former Augie.
There you go. Anyway, hey guys, this is great. If nothing else, we'll replay this besides the podcast on a live show.
You got it.
All right. We'll have to do this again. I think this is we're probably going to have a few more debates down the road.
And I've been weighing in on Joe Biden's candidacy Sunday at www.thegreatingkind.com.